The opinions and views expressed by the host and guest are not necessarily the views and opinions of the Blake Radio Network. Broadcasting to the world. Broadcasting to the world.
BlakeRadio.com. Music for your mind, body, and soul. Talk radio at its best. You're listening to Rainbow Soul. BlakeRadio.com.
This is Dr. Jennifer Daniels, and you are listening to Healing with Dr. Daniels. I just like to let you know you're listening to Blake Radio. This is Rainbow Soul, and please visit vitalitycapsules.com/findout to find out your risk of murder by medicine. And as always, we love to hear phone calls and questions, so please give us a call at 914-338-0695. I'd like to recap the theme of this radio show, which is the competent practice of medicine, according to the standard of care, is the leading cause of death in America. Healing with Dr. Daniels is a place where you can get honest answers that can save your life. This is the place to get healing news you can use without all the technical mumbo-jumbo. As I mentioned before, guests can call in at 914-338-0695. And today we have got a fabulous show for you. The topic today is MRSA, the plague on your dinner plate. Now, the shocking thing about MRSA is really how little we hear about it. MRSA kills 48,000 people every year in the United States. I should say every year, this past year in the United States. And we really don't hear much about it. That's more than twice as many deaths as there are from AIDS. It's a major killer. In fact, if you look at the vital statistics, where the government publishes figures on the leading causes of death, they actually do not even give MRSA its own separate category, and that's a shocker. It's also only a reportable disease in 27 of states. So let's figure out what's going on with this MRSA, why it's killing so many people, why it's going to kill a lot more people, and what you personally can do to protect yourself and your family. So here we go. First, the information I'm going to give you is so absolutely shocking that I first have to give you some credentials, right? Okay. I graduated from Harvard University way back in 1979. I also graduated University of Pennsylvania School of Medicine in 1983 and became board certified in family practice medicine and practiced family practice in a private practice. This is very important because in a private practice, and it's not a clinic practice, but a private practice, especially a solo practice, when I prescribed a drug, I personally saw the effects of that drug. So there was no partner taking calls for me or anything like that that could possibly mitigate or conceal from me the effect of what I was prescribing. Also, I graduated from Wharton Business School also in 1983 and received an MBA. And so this also gives me my perspective, the economic perspective I have, of a lot of the impact of what modern medicine is doing. So I was in private practice from 1990 until 2000, And this was literally a ringside seat to the evolution of MRSA. When I graduated from medical school in 1983, MRSA was almost unheard of. And in 1990, by the time I had opened my own private practice, I just began to hear about MRSA. Yeah, it was a problem. It's kind of growing. But, you know, the infectious disease experts kind of, they were on the case. They were working on it, not to worry. And it just grew, and it grew, and it grew, and it literally exploded. And finally, around 2003, it kind of made its way on the scene when it was killing about 6,000 people. And so this is the phenomenal growth from killing 6,000 people or so in early 2000 to now in 2012, actually really 2010, killing 48,000 people. Now that's another piece of embarrassment. The latest year for which figures are even available is 2010, 2 years old. You would think something killing that many patients, they would be counting the deaths by the day, but no, they don't. So how do I know so much about this? Well, I witnessed my patients develop resistant organisms. As I followed the standard of care, which is basically if a person has an infection, you give them antibiotics. If the antibiotics don't work, you give them more antibiotics. And if that doesn't work, you give them more antibiotics. And you check them every 2 weeks or so, and you prescribe another antibiotic. And there came a point where I wanted to find out, well, if these antibiotics aren't working, what is the infectious organism that I'm fighting? And when I did a culture, I was shocked and humiliated to find that the organism I was supposedly trying to extinguish was a resistant, antibiotic-resistant organism that had been created by the antibiotics I prescribed. And this caused me to say, whoa, stop, slow down, back up. And I started developing herbal alternatives to antibiotics that worked actually a lot better than the antibiotics. And so, but first I got to give you some background of this and explain to you what's going on with MRSA and how every single citizen of the United States is at risk. So what is MRSA? MRSA is actually spelled with all capital letters. It's an acronym, and it's spelled M-R-S-A, MRSA. If you pronounce it properly, you will definitely amaze your friends and confound your enemies. So this is an acronym. It stands for Methicillin-Resistant Staphylococcus aureus. Now, that is a misnomer, and that is very confusing. It is Staphylococcus aureus, but it's resistant to not only methicillin, but a whole bunch of antibiotics. And so this is a name we give to any staph organism, and staph is short for staphylococcus, any staph organism that is resistant to many antibiotics. So it's resistant to most modern antibiotics. As I mentioned, it is deadly. It kills 48,000 people a year in the United States, mostly in hospitals. And so why should you care? Well, you should care because the frequency of MRSA is rising. This infection that was once confined to hospitals is now killing people who have never been to a hospital. It's killing people who, to their knowledge, have not been consuming antibiotics. And it's really creating a general level of panic because the question is, if it's no longer associated with hospitals and everyone seems to be getting it, how do you avoid it? You know, what really is the pattern of spread? What's going on here? So you should worry about this. You should be concerned about this because it's now affecting people, whether they're inside a hospital or not. It's affecting people of all ages. And consenting to medical care is the leading cause, not only of death in the United States, but of death by MRSA. So how is MRSA created? And you need to understand, MRSA is no doubt, make no mistake about it, MRSA is created. It is a man-made phenomenon. I was, you know, sounds like really conspiracy theory stuff. But I'm not saying anyone's inspired to create MRSA, but I am saying MRSA is definitely created by the behavior of human beings. And so if you understand what human behavior causes MRSA, then you can say, oh, I think I'll stop that human behavior. Or you can say, I won't participate in that human behavior. I'm not letting anyone do that to me. So at least you'll know what causes MRSA. Right now what's happening is it's really more based on superstition. And so people are doing a lot of things to keep from getting this hospital-based flesh-eating deadly bacteria, and these things, of course, are all ineffective, which suggests, of course, that what's being done has nothing to do with the cause of the problem. So let's talk about where MRSA came from. How did it start off? Well, MRSA started off life as a common bacteria called MRSA. Notice the R is missing. It's MRSA. It means it's methicillin-sensitive staph aureus. So this bacteria started off as a bacteria that was sensitive to pretty much any and all antibiotics. That's what we're told. The truth of the matter is, in any population of bacteria that's sensitive to antibiotics, there's always one or two that have the ability to be resistant to antibiotics. And this resistance is contained in a plasmid. Depending on who you talk to, this plasmid is DNA material, or it's RNA material, or it's a protein. It doesn't matter. Don't even worry yourself about it. The point is, it's a piece of material in the bacteria that causes resistance or confers resistance. So, you've got this population of bacteria minding their own business and just hanging out. And if it's staph, it's hanging out on the skin. And guess what? 60% of people have staph on their skin. These are healthy people who have no illness. So then what happens? Then you expose these staph to antibiotics. And what happens? Well, these little cells, the bacteria, the ones that are resistant, they immediately start replicating this plasmid and immediately start sharing with every single cell next to them. Then those cells replicate that little plasmid and they share it to all the cells next to them. And you can develop resistance pretty quickly in a matter of days. So it's not necessary for a bacteria to multiply and divide in order to pass this resistance on to other bacteria. It's as simple as you sharing a file on your computer where you can just click send to everyone in my address book and click all. Literally, you can click two buttons and you can share everything in your particular computer file with really all of your buddies, with maybe a few hundred people and maybe a few thousand people. And you can do it very quickly. And bacteria do exactly the same thing. This is just like file sharing on the internet. And it spreads quickly. And that's why it's just so hard to handle when it arises. Now, next thing to know is what happens when these resistant bacteria are no longer exposed to antibiotics. Take the antibiotics away, what happens? Well, it turns out that these plasmids are a real pain in the patootie. And they suck up a lot of energy, and any bacteria that has these plasmids in them is at a biological disadvantage when there are no antibiotics around. So what happens? The bacteria eject these plasmids, kick them out, and the bacteria return to being sensitive to antibiotics. So if you have an individual who has MRSA, has resistant bacteria all over their skin, in their mouth, in their nose, in their eyeballs, and you do not expose them to antibiotics for a month, at least a third of them at the end of the month will no longer test positive for resistant bacteria. This is very important information to be aware of. So what causes MRSA? MRSA is caused by antibiotics, period. Done. End of discussion. It's caused by antibiotics. No antibiotics, no MRSA. That's it. And where are the antibiotics? This is important to understand. Antibiotics are now being given to commercial animals. That means chickens, cows, pigs, and even fish. Can you believe it? Fish, raised in fish farms, are filled with antibiotics, which to me is like mind-boggling, but it's the case. Also, obviously, doctors write prescriptions for antibiotics, but did you know 80% of all the antibiotics consumed are not consumed by people? So a doctor sitting in his office writing antibiotic prescriptions, even if he gives one to every single person that comes in his office, you really cannot blame this resistant epidemic to a doctor sitting in his office over-prescribing antibiotics. This is an issue of people being exposed to antibiotics all day long, day in and day out. Another thing you might want to be aware of is 25% of all the meats in the United States on the store shelves test positive for MRSA. So, let's say you go to the store and you buy four pieces of meat. A piece of meat for Monday, number for Tuesday, number for Wednesday, number for Thursday. Well, it's a 25% chance that any one of those has MRSA. And in other words, in the course of a week, if you eat meat every day, chances are about 100% that you're eating MRSA. And the real deal is it's just amazing that more people aren't dying of this, which, of course, is a testament to the strength of the immune system. So prescriptions can be a source. But did you know your body soap, your antimicrobial body soap, if this is antimicrobial, it kills organisms, guess what? It is making resistant bacteria even more resistant. Because now they're going to develop a resistance to the antimicrobial or the bacteria-killing substance in your hand, in your body soap. Same thing for hand sanitizers. Anything you own in your home that has antimicrobial written on it or kills bacteria, it's giving you MRSA. So whether it's your dish soap for your dishes and laundry soap for your clothes, so anything that's antimicrobial simply serves to strengthen MRSA and to make MRSA stronger. Next, of course, antibiotics. As we mentioned, 80% of all antibiotics are used in animal feed. And you get four times as much antibiotics in your daily diet as your doctor is prescribing. And even if you don't go to see the doctor, so you say, you know, I'm through with the doctor. I am not going to the doctor. You're still getting a pretty high dose of antibiotics. And the other thing is, of the antibiotics your doctor prescribes, 99% are for cases where there is no infection, which is a preventative case, or cases where antibiotics are proven to be ineffective, such as sore throat, sinusitis, and most ear infections. All these things don't respond to antibiotics. And a lot of times doctors will give you an antibiotic for bronchitis, let's say. But most bronchitis are viral. Or even worse, he might be giving you an antibiotic that's not effective for the type of infection that you have. In any case, whatever antibiotic you're receiving is making your body's own staff antibiotic resistant and converting them to MRSA. But remember, 99% of all antibiotics prescribed by doctors are prescribed in cases where antibiotics are ineffective. So it cannot be argued that antibiotics save lives, since fewer than 0.2% of antibiotics are even used for this purpose. So that's 1 in 500. So 1 in 500 cases where antibiotics are used, is it possibly for life-saving case? The other thing that kind of gives away the whole thing is that there's 48,000 deaths from MRSA because people had antibiotics, and there's fewer than 15,000 deaths from people who had infections and died, you know, from non-treatment. So that's an issue. You really, it's so tough to get a grasp of that. And I can tell you, when I was in medical school, when we got to a chapter on antibiotics, I was so excited. I'm like, this, yes, this is my chance to make a difference. This is my chance to save lives. Yes, I am so excited. And now we find out that, no, that didn't work either. So now, having MRSA, by the way, again, you've got to stick with me on this, is harmless. It is absolutely no harm in having MRSA. So when your MRSA, which is your sensitive staff, becomes MRSA, which is your resistant staff, you do not become sick. People live for years and years and years with MRSA on the skin. This is called colonization. It has no symptoms. You can culture the nose, the skin, the eyeballs, and they'll all be positive for MRSA. Treatment at this stage merely makes MRSA stronger as it develops more resistance. Treatment at this stage makes the person more likely to die if the MRSA should become an infection. So intravenous antibiotics make MRSA enter into a deadly symptomatic phase. Therefore, if you have MRSA on your skin but no symptoms, you should never, ever, ever consent to treatment. One, because treatment makes the MRSA more deadly. And two, if you do nothing, 30% of the MRSA will go away each month that you do nothing. And that's a pretty high cure rate. So when you're treating MRSA, you get more antibiotics, more resistance, and more harm. I'd like to take a little station break here so that you know you're listening to Blake Radio, Rainbow Soul. This is Healing with Dr. Daniels. And please visit VitalityCapsules.com/find out to find out your risk of murder by medicine. And guest call-in number is 914-338-0695. And so you've created MRSA, which is harmless. MRSA is harmless. So how do we get harmless MRSA to deadly MRSA? How do we get harmless MRSA to where it's killing 48,000 people a year? Okay. This is an important distinction because in order to die from MRSA, obviously you have to convert your harmless MRSA into deadly MRSA. Harmful MRSA or deadly MRSA is able to enter the body. So it will not be a secret. You have a painful rash, you have a boil or an abscess, you have a cough, abdominal pain, a lot of times in the urinary area, and fever, and the culture is positive. The treatment for MRSA is so dangerous that it would not even be a good idea to consent to MRSA therapy until you have a positive culture. And even then, not until you have symptoms. So, there's a special note here. Person-to-person contact is not a substantial method of spread if you have no open wounds. So if you have no open wounds, then person-to-person contact is not an effective way of spreading MRSA. It is the open wound or break in the skin that is necessary inciting event. So what happens is you have this deadly bacteria, it's harmlessly sitting on your skin, you need a break in the skin, the bacteria enter your blood, and then one-tenth of people who reach that particular state will die. And that's with all medical therapy. And so simply covering your wound when you go in public is a preventable for transmission in terms of getting MRSA from other people if you don't already have MRSA. So why is the hospital so dangerous? Well, in the United States, the first thing that happens when you are admitted to the hospital is they start an IV. This breaks the skin, and MRSA enters your body, or it can enter your body. So if you already have MRSA, harmless MRSA, you go to the hospital, they put an IV in, it's a break in your skin, and the antibiotic goes into your body right along the catheter. Now, why would a hospital routinely put an IV in every single patient if they know that breaks in the skin cause harmless MRSA to become harmful MRSA and can cause people to die? Well, it turns out insurance will not pay for a hospital admission if the patient does not have an IV. They do pay if the person gets MRSA. In fact, they pay very well. So the person is not colonized. The break in the skin now permits entry of MRSA from other patients, from unclean objects, and from hospital staff. But the necessary event is the break in the skin. No break in the skin, no hazards, no danger. And this is a really important thing to grasp. So more ways to spread MRSA. There's so many ways to spread MRSA. One is insert needle into the skin, which we talked about. Another common way to insert needle into the skin is if you're diabetic and on insulin, right? You're jabbing yourself with needles all the time. And so all these bacteria in your skin that on your skin are harmless can find their way in along the needle track. And contrary to popular opinion, it is not possible to sterilize the skin. You can wipe all you want with a nice little alcohol pad. It's a nice thing to do. It does reduce the bacteria, but it's not going to cut your chances down to zero. You're still potentially at risk. So next thing is to administer antibiotics. And the stronger the antibiotic and the longer it's used, the more likely you are to get MRSA. That is worth repeating. The stronger the antibiotic, the longer it is used, the more likely you are to get MRSA. So when a doctor prescribes antibiotics for you, and he says take one pill three times a day for 10 days, and you start feeling better on the third day, what should you do? Well, the answer, the medical answer, is take the full 10 days. The practical, pragmatic, I want to save my life answer is, for Christ's sake, stop it immediately. Your immune system is taking over. Let your immune system do what it's going to do. So the longer you take the antibiotics, the more likely you are to get resistance. What we are taught in medical school, which is if you take the antibiotic for 3 days instead of the full 10 days, you're going to get resistance, is just not true. And even the drug companies themselves have revised many of the antibiotic schedules to be one dose only or for 3 days instead of the old dose of 10 days. It was simply that the profits were maximized at the 10-day point back way back then. Now, another way to get MRSA, deadly MRSA, is to have a urinary catheter inserted, a cardiac catheter inserted, to be intubated. And this is why people going into surgery, into the hospital for routine surgery, where they get general anesthesia, they get the surgery, and then, oops, they have MRSA. What happened? What happens is whenever you're intubated, that tube kind of just scrapes the mucosa a bit, and you now have a break in the skin. And so if you have MRSA on your skin that was not harming you, it now gets in, and it gives you pneumonia, and, you know, that's downward trail from that. Heparin catheter for just in case. A lot of times if you're in a hospital, you're at bed rest, they'll put a catheter in, or they give you periodic heparin injections, a nasogastric tube, they put that in maybe to pump your stomach or whatever. So these are all ways to spread MRSA in the hospital. And so to recap, really make sure you absolutely understand this. The bacteria has to meet up with an antibiotic. Then there has to be a break in the skin. Those are the two things you need to get MRSA, and that's really all there is to it. You need the bacteria to meet up with the antibiotic. Then you need a break in the skin so it can get into your system, and that's what kills you. And so how do hospitals kill them? What's up with this? So I wrote a comic strip about this. I hope you'll enjoy this little comic, even though it's a picture. I'll just explain it to you. So the wife and the doctor in the hospital room with the patient who's laying in bed, and he's clearly not doing well. And the wife says, "Doctor, is he going to make it?" And the patient has a very strong antibiotic called antibiotic kill-it-all going into his body through a catheter. So he's got a very strong antibiotic going into his body with a hole breaking the skin so MRSA can enter. Then he's got another tube going from his bladder into a bag, another route for MRSA to enter. The doctor has ordered this antibiotic. He's ordered this catheter. And then on the table is food filled with MRSA, because 25% of all food has MRSA. Meat and dairy has MRSA in it. So the doctor says to the wife, "We are very encouraged by the fact that he has not had MRSA. Once his appetite picks up, he'll do just fine." And, of course, once his appetite picks up, he'll definitely be dead, because we know there's MRSA in his food, and he's got the strong antibiotic and these holes everywhere, and so he's really a goner. And this is how hospitals kill. You have everything you need here for the patient to get MRSA, and just you just couldn't make a better situation. So what are the consequences of MRSA? So if you get MRSA, what happens? Well, first of all, you end up staying longer in the hospital. You end up having increased use of the intensive care unit. And the hospital gets $13.3 billion in increased revenue for hospitals over the year. It's a pretty big moneymaker. And, of course, 48,000 more deaths per year happen to patients. And this translates into about 500,000 injuries, hospital injuries. People are injured every year in the hospitals. So what are the hospitals doing? Well, they're isolating patients. As we mentioned before, this happens when the bacteria meets up with an antibiotic. So isolating the patient is not in any way going to affect his odds of developing MRSA. Unless, of course, he has a hole in his skin and his roommate who has MRSA, you know, the nurse goes from one patient to the other and there you have a situation. And then you're using gloves and gowns and masks and hats and booties, the whole, I call it the hazmat routine. Again, this can be expected to be pretty much ineffective. Why? Because, again, bacteria meets antibiotic and a hole in the skin. So the glove, gown, mask, hat, and booties does not reduce the number of holes in the patient's skin and does not reduce the probability of staff encountering an antibiotic. Now, what could hospitals do? What could they do? A lot of research has been done on this because this has become an issue of international concern. Well, in Europe, they have found that if they screen patients on admission and separate the MRSA carriers, people who have MRSA but no symptoms, put them in one area of the hospital, and then put the people who came in with no MRSA in another part of the hospital, then that works out very well. Because now what's happening is you have a person who has MRSA all over their body but no symptoms with a roommate who has no MRSA. They both have holes in their skin, and the person with MRSA will unknowingly share their MRSA with the person who does not have MRSA. And again, the nurse doesn't even know that the asymptomatic person has MRSA because, of course, they weren't tested. So you could test upon admission and screen them and separate them to two different areas of the hospital. So that hasn't happened. The other thing they could do is refuse to allow the use of antibiotics when there's no infection. This sounds really stupid, doesn't it? But if there's no infection, don't use antibiotics. And so what's happening now in antibiotics is before every surgery, or no, most surgeries, people get an intravenous dose of antibiotics, supposedly to reduce the chance of surgical infection. But instead, what we're having is an increased chance of MRSA. So what's happening with hospitals is they're taking very expensive and very ineffective methods to control MRSA, and we know this because the frequency of MRSA is rising. Now, why would a hospital do that? Why would they bump up the hospital bill, basically talking pad the bill here, and doing things that are not going to decrease the person's chances of getting this deadly infection? It's not protecting the patient, but it's increasing the cost. So it's because MRSA has become an upsell. An upsell is a profit-making add-on that you get when you consume an object. For example, when you buy a car, they'll say, hey, would you like some shiny rims with that? Or, hey, would you like a special GPS thrown in with that? So it's an upsell. And so when you go to the hospital, MRSA is an upsell, a money-making add-on. It's like going to a fast food joint and they ask, do you want fries with that? Unfortunately, the patient doesn't get asked if he wants MRSA, and he doesn't get the consent. So until MRSA stops being a profit center, it will continue. $13.3 billion is a lot to walk away from, and you can really try the ethics of just about anybody. If people want to ask a question, they can click star 1, and then I'll see a question mark next to their telephone, and I can open it up for questions. So whose problem is this? Well, for the hospitals, MRSA is not really a problem. It's a profit center. But for patients, it's a death trap. So this is like a big problem for patients. The question is the problem getting better? Well, no, I don't think so. There are no reliable figures. Well, how come there aren't any reliable figures? Well, there's no reliable figures because MRSA is not a reportable condition in every state. It's only reportable in 27 states. And the hospitals control the labs that are doing the tests. Also, the cause of death is often a matter of politics and reimbursement. So the doctor who filled out the death certificate, is trying to figure out what he needs to put in that death certificate in order to get paid and secret hospital privileges. And you can bet your bippy, putting MRSA on the death certificate is not a good career decision. And so there's really not any evidence that MRSA is getting better. Now, another question, what is the treatment for MRSA? Well, the treatment for MRSA is antibiotics. I know. If antibiotics cause MRSA, why do you treat it with antibiotics? But this logic is not mine. This is just the standard of care. So, and what antibiotic? Answer, clindamycin is very effective for many MRSA patients in its use. So what's not communicated to the patient, what's not also added up, is that clindamycin causes another infection, C. difficile, which is equally deadly, and causes 15,000 deaths per year. And we can see C. difficile deaths have also been rising. So the real death toll from MRSA, 48,000, and from C. difficile, which is 15,000, is closer to 63,000 deaths per year. But again, that's some pretty fancy math there. And so really what's happening at the hospital is they're just playing dress-up. They're dressing up the problem, and they're not doing things that are effective. Now, another thing hospitals could do is they could check all of their meat and dairy products that come into the hospital for antibiotic residues or for MRSA residues and refuse to accept shipments of any contaminated food and refuse to feed any contaminated food to their patients. I actually suggested this back in 1993, and I was told that they couldn't do that because that was not practical and patients wouldn't like that. Go figure. They can also use non-antibiotic therapies for any fever until cultures confirm the infection and sensitivities. They can also use non-antibiotic measures to prevent infections. For example, way back when, before antibiotics came on the scene, it was very common to do enemas to clean all the bacteria out of the intestines prior to surgery, which is actually pretty effective. And also, another policy that would be good, don't install a tube or needle unless the condition for which it's being used is deadly. Because putting a tube in is deadly, so it wouldn't make sense to put a tube in someone if the condition they have is not likely to cause death. And also to remove any tubes and needles as soon as possible. These measures have all been pretty much rejected in the United States. And it's really unfortunate, much to the detriment of the patient. And so, going to hospitals kills more people each year than the U.S. killed in Iraq in 1 year. In other words, death toll of Americans who died as a result of showing up at the hospital is more than were killed on purpose in the field of battle in Iraq. And that's really, really stunning. Unfortunately, it's true. I'm just going to say hi to our listeners here. Oops. Hi, you're on the air. It's Dr. Daniels. How are you? Okay, just saying hello and see if you have any questions. So I will mute you. Oh. Hold. Okay. I see another caller. Caller, area code 516,
yes.
You're on the air. Hi, do you have any questions at all?
Yes. Have there been any successful lawsuits against hospitals for contraction of MRSA?
Excuse me?
Have there been any successful lawsuits against hospitals that have people who have contracted?
That's an excellent
MRSA?
Question. Yes, lawsuits. Well, hospitals carry something called liability insurance. Every lawsuit is paid for by their liability insurer. So it's just a cost of doing business. It in no way impacts their profits.
Oh.
Yeah.
So they're still making money even though they're...
More money. Absolutely, yes.
Muted.
Oh, that's another... This is a good point. If you're discharged from the hospital alive, the average bill is going to be in the area of $9,000. If you're discharged dead, deceased, the average hospital bill is somewhere in the area of $48,000. That's a pretty big difference. So obviously the financial incentive is to continue care until the point of death, or to continue care in such a way that death results. And so then you have the issue that there is no criminal penalty for this, and this is taken care of by liability insurance. You just call the lawyers in and say, take care of that. Those pesky relatives, you know, whatever. Just handle them. Does that answer your question? Okay. Well, those are some good questions from our caller there. Now, what can you do at home? I mean, as a private citizen, because obviously you're pretty much on your own here. You could discard everything in your home that says it kills bacteria. Your personal care products, your laundry soap, your dish soap, your deodorizers, all these things are just giving you MRSA. I personally use rice bran on my skin. If you want to know more about that, you can go to my website, vitalitycapsules.com, and my book is Do You Have the Guts to Be Beautiful? And literally tells you how to care for yourself, erase your wrinkles in a way that's not going to endanger your health. Next, do wash your hands before meals and before touching your face or nose. However, wash your hands with the soap that is not antimicrobial. You can use a glycerin soap. You can use, I use Dr. Bronner's soap. Actually, I use rice bran. I use this really bland soap that I also use for dishes. I have this attitude that if I can keep my chemicals down to a minimum, so I don't use one chemical for my hand soap and one chemical for my dishes and another chemical for this. I try and just pick one chemical and limit myself to those chemicals. That's another thing you may want to do. Also, ask your doctor to treat you without IVs or needles if you go to the hospital. So if you go to the hospital, say, hey, doc, what are you going to put in that IV? And he'll tell you. Because, like, you know what? I think I could drink that. How about I drink that? And the doctor will kind of shrug his shoulders and say, well, okay. And that can really, honestly, that can save your life. So ask your doctor to treat you without IVs or needles if you go into the hospital. Also, if your doctor recommends an antibiotic, ask your doctor what else can be done besides antibiotics if he recommends one. You will be absolutely shocked. And your doctor will say, you know what? You don't really need that antibiotic anyway. I was just prescribing it just in case. I mean, you'd just be so shocked at how often doctors will prescribe the antibiotic just as a way of ending the office visit or a way of completing the conversation. So when your doctor recommends an antibiotic, let him know you still love him. It's okay. And ask him to do something else he could do. Like maybe he'll say, oh, you know what? We can wait 3 or 4 days. We can wait and see. So go with that. The other thing you can do is you can go to my website, vitalitycapsules.com, and when you opt in with your name, you get a free gift, which is a report I wrote detailing non-antibiotic treatments for 10 diseases. These are what I use in my practice, and actually, they work better than antibiotics. I was actually shocked and relieved. I have to also give a disclaimer here that I'm not practicing medicine here on the air. Nothing I say is intended to replace medical therapy to cure, diagnose, or treat any disease. Also, you're listening to Blake Radio, Rainbow Soul. This is Healing with Dr. Daniels. And please visit vitalitycapsules.com/find out to find out your risk of murder by medicine. So, more at-home actions. Now, I mentioned that 25% of all meat on the store shelves has MRSA on it. So you can actually get together with your neighbors and pool your resources to figure out, hey, let's test the meat that we're buying and see where the MRSA is. And if you find a source of meat that has MRSA, stop buying your meat from that particular source. And you may even want to form a co-op where you publish a list of safe places to shop for your meat and dairy products. Now, there's also an alternative view on this. And part of the alternative view is taking a look at the risk factors. Now, people who are at high risk of MRSA are people who are in the hospital and they eat institutional food, prison inmates, college dormitory residents, our residents living in a nursing home, military recruits, and homeless people eating at homeless shelters. All of these, and people who are in contact with living food-producing animals, like people who work on farms, they are directly exposed to MRSA. Now, the thing that all these people have in common, the hospital patients, prison inmates, dormitory people, is they are eating institutionalized food purchased in bulk by somebody who does not have to eat the food. That is like the most dangerous way you can get your food. So, you need to, if you're a college student or if you have a college student, definitely do not sign up for the college meal plan, because what's the college doing? They're buying the meats on sale, in bulk, at discount, and these are the meats that are most likely to be contaminated. Athletes are high risk for MRSA because most athletes are eating institutionalized food, school age, and because of their sport, contact sports, they get a break in the skin and boom. You have organism meeting up with antibiotic and a break in the skin. And that's it. That's all she wrote. Children are getting MRSA now because of the multiple antibiotics for ear infections. So more home actions. Empty your bowels at least 3 times a day. This is huge because what your immune system tries to do is it tries to take all the MRSA to the intestines for disposal. And if your bowels are moving regularly, that stuff gets dumped out into the toilet and it doesn't become a problem. Also drink plenty of water. This is the way your immune system flushes things. I'd like to take a station break and just let you know you're listening to Blake Radio, Rainbow Soul. This is Healing with Dr. Daniels. And please visit vitalitycapsules.com/find out to find out your risk of murder by medicine. So the alternative theory is you have to take a look at what human beings are. Human beings basically have 50 trillion cells, but they have 500 trillion microorganisms in their bodies. These microorganisms eat you, they eat your waste, they eat the food that you eat, But they also support your immune system. They influence your personality. They manufacture vitamins like B12. They manufacture enzymes so you can digest your food. And they even provide structural support for your body. So these organisms are really responsible for your very existence. And so these microorganisms, we're calling them microorganisms, but these organisms that combat disease and help you live are the very same organisms that antibiotics kill. So antibiotic, anti-life, is really what antibiotics are. They're anti-life. They're anti-you. They're killing you directly by destroying these microorganisms, these 500 trillion microorganisms that are a necessary part of your body so you can be healthy and enjoy your life. Now, what's healthy? This is a very important question. It's so important that some researchers actually got to be able to answer it. And they've done what's called the microbiome project. Microbiome means the community of living organisms, microscopic organisms that live in your body. So they did, they got 600 people that were certified healthy. Then it took these 600 people and put them through blood tests and all kinds of more tests, and whittled it down to a number of 248 people who were in absolute health by any and all measures. Then they cultured the mouth, rectum, skin, nose, eye fluid, vagina, and armpits of all these people, and this is what they found. They found bacteroides present in 100% of these healthy people. Bacteroides, many different species of bacteroides. They found E. coli in 100% of these people, these healthy people. They found Klebsiella in 80%, Bifidus in 70%, and Staphylococcus in 50%. So, Staph is actually one of the good guys. Since this staphylococcal organism that we are trying to kill and bombard with antibiotics is literally one of the good guys. Without Staph, 50% of the people who are certified healthy probably would not be healthy. Then, of course, there's lactobacillus, found in 60% of people. And I could go on and on and on, but the point is this. Many of the organisms listed in this list of organisms found in healthy people are the very same organisms that we doctors are trained to believe are disease-causing, and we are trained to kill on site. In fact, we're trained to kill them if we don't see them. And so, on the holistic view, it's like, whoa, back up. These are the good guys. Let's find a way to live in harmony with the good guys that are keeping us alive. And so the question is, what are these things doing? What happens when we have an infection, we do a culture, we find one of these good guys? What's really going on here? It might be that the body is having a problem and has deployed these good guys to go to the site to address the problem. Now, that's just an alternative way of thinking of things, but it seems to make sense. Antibiotics actually perturb your microbiome. It perturbs the 500 trillion cells or microorganisms that are keeping you alive. And when you bombard your body with antibiotics, it takes a long time to recover. And microbes unrelated to your illness and very much related to your health are actually damaged as well. And so your gut bacteria are under constant assault. And just like I said, you got to get rid of the antibiotics, your chlorinated water, which kills your good bacteria, your antibacterial soap, agricultural chemicals, easy, just eat organic, get rid of the pesticides and herbicides. And, of course, pollution, you have to just try to avoid that. Now, long-term effects of antibiotics are devastating. They have an association with breast cancer, yeast infection, chronic pain, irritable bowel, even suicide. Levaquin, Cipro, for example, actually cause suicide. People take those and say, you know what, I think I'll kill myself, and they do. So antibiotics are definitely hazardous. So the antibiotic revolution, in summary, has been a hoax which has destroyed our bodies and our health. Antibiotic use easily ranks as the third leading cause of death, ahead of infections from all causes. And so we really should not allow ourselves to be intimidated into what amounts to a marketing message from antibiotic makers. So what can you do? Feed the good guys. The good guys love garlic. They also like to eat your food. And when you feed them, what you feed them determines which ones you get and how you feel. And so eat those unprocessed fresh foods with no chemicals, no genetically modified organisms. And nothing processed. If it's been bleached, separated, whatever, just leave it on there. Don't even bother to buy it. And cultivate the good guys. Sauerkraut is my favorite. What sauerkraut does is it's fermented cabbage, and you drink the sauerkraut juice. That's the active ingredient. It's filled with billions of microorganisms, and when you drink them, these are the good guys. They repopulate your biome, repair your biome, and make you stronger and disease-resistant. If you don't like sauerkraut, you can use apple cider vinegar, organic unfiltered. And you need to cultivate the good guys. Let me just see if we have any questions here, because we have a couple of minutes. Hi, area code 516. You're on the air. Do you have a question? Hello? Okay. Hi, caller. You're on the air. Area code 856. Do you have a question you'd like to ask? Okay, so there being no questions. So how do you cultivate the good guys? Well, with sauerkraut, you just take 2 teaspoons salt per quart of non-chlorinated water. Grate some cabbage. I like to throw in some caraway seeds because it tastes good and it's good for digestion. And you grate the cabbage, stuff it in a glass container, pour this salt water over it, and you put a leaf of cabbage on top, put a rock on top of it kind of as a weight, and you just let it sit there for anywhere from 2 days to 6 days, if you're really into sauerkraut, let it go for 2 weeks. And what will happen is you will cultivate the good guys. When you drink this, it will literally repair your biome. It's so important to avoid all antibiotics. And remember, if it's not life-threatening, you have time to try something else because antibiotics are life-threatening. And if you check the meats and eat only ones without antibiotics, you will be able to take a few antibiotics, if you so desire, without getting MRSA. Because getting MRSA is a cumulative effect. Every time you bombard your body with antibiotics, every time you expose your body to antibiotics, you increase your chances of getting MRSA, and if you have MRSA, you're making it stronger and stronger and stronger. And so wiping all antibiotics out of your life, unless and until you personally decide they're absolutely essential, will go a long way towards keeping you from getting MRSA and keeping you alive. So remember, you can go to vitalitycapsules.com and get your free report, Non-Antibiotic Answers to 10 Common Infections. And that's vitalitycapsules.com. And I'd like to say that you are listening to Blake Radio, Rainbow Soul. This is Healing with Dr. Daniels. And please visit vitalitycapsules.com/findout to find out your risk of murder by medicine. And next week's show will be Americans, the New Cash Crop. And I'm going to talk about the farming and harvesting of humans and how this is going on, how it's happening, how to recognize it around you, and what to do if you choose not to be a victim of this and not to participate in this harvesting practice. Because definitely to be harvested does require your consent. And you can take a look around you and say, hey, wait a minute, I don't want to be harvested. I think I'm gonna not participate in this. Or you can say, you know what, harvesting works for me and it's okay. Either way, that's the topic of our next presentation. And if people would like to ask questions, they can click *1 and raise their hands. Okay, there being no more questions. I have a joke to tell. So a little comic strip. This woman is has a big smile on her face, and she says, my doctor prescribed this antibiotic. I should be better soon. There's a little box that says anti means against, bios means life. An antibiotic is capable of causing death, a kill pill. A little boy in the corner of the comic strip says, why would someone take a kill pill and expect health? And, of course, it notes that antibiotics cause MRSA, which is an infection that kills 48,000 Americans each year. And remember, these infections are caused by antibiotics. Without antibiotics, these deaths would not happen. And so it's really an absolute tragedy. And again, 48,000 are killed by MRSA, but another 15,000 are killed by C. difficile, which results when you treat the MRSA with clindamycin. So we're really looking at closer to 63,000 deaths per year. So I'd like to thank everyone for listening and encourage people to visit vitalitycapsules.com/find out and take a brief survey there to find out their chances of death by medicine. Thank you very much. Okay, goodbye. I'll see you next week.
Make believe.